I am Paul Harris. It's the Big 550 KTRS. David Goldfield is a history professor at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. He's the author of 16 books on Southern and American history. As he says, those are not the same thing. His latest book is called The Gifted Generation, When Government Was Good. And he's here to talk about it. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing fine, Paul. Good to be with you.
Thanks for coming on today. The Gifted Generation, are you talking about baby boomers like me?
Yeah, but a certain cohort of the baby boomers, those born between roughly 1943 and 1953, that cohort really reaped the benefits of an activist government that provided opportunities so they could participate in the American enterprise.
What kind of opportunities are we talking about?
Housing, for one, supporting low-interest loans for housing, subsidies for education, grants for research and development, the construction of the interstate highway system to enable people to get to and from work and to move about the country. It was the greatest public works project in American history, still is, as a matter of fact, and also, the fact that the government expanded the civil rights not only for African Americans but also for women and the sons and daughters of Catholic and Jewish immigrants who were pretty much excluded from American life prior to the 1940s.
The years you're talking about would put us during the presidencies of Harry Truman and Dwight Eisenhower and the beginnings of JFK and into LBJ. Are these people who were more sympathetic to working class Americans because they themselves, except for Kennedy, didn't have much when they grew up?
It's interesting. Just as a quick aside, Paul, I really devote only one chapter to Kennedy. He's really not a part of this mix.
Right.
And I think you've put your finger on one of the reasons why. Truman, Eisenhower, and Johnson came from what we would call today working-class backgrounds. In fact, they were quite poor. Eisenhower could not afford to go to college. He could only afford to go to the military academy at West Point, because it was free.
Yeah.
And Lyndon Johnson had to drop out of college after 1 year because, again, he couldn't afford it. And as far as Harry Truman was concerned, he couldn't afford college, period, because he had to go to work on his family's farm. He was the last president not to attend college.
So we're also talking about guys who remember the Depression.
Oh, yeah. They were very active during the Depression. Truman was elected to the Senate at that time. Eisenhower, of course, received his military commission and worked with General John J. Pershing, the hero of World War I. And Lyndon B. Johnson served first as an aide to a congressman in the 1930s and then became a congressman in his own right.
So when we talk about people who are of that era, we're talking about these people who became leaders in our country. But what was public opinion like about these programs that the federal government was doing under that leadership?
This is interesting, Paul, because these presidents were in many respects far ahead of public opinion. For example, Harry Truman pursued civil rights, and according to the Gallup survey at the time in 1946, only 6% of Americans believed that civil rights was an important issue. And if you look at immigration, only about 15% of Americans believed that the discriminatory quotas, which discriminated against immigrants from Southern and Eastern Europe, who also happened to be overwhelmingly Jewish or Roman Catholic, that was okay because these folks would come in and be very difficult to assimilate. They spoke strange languages, and some of them were even communists.
You do that sort of thing now, and public opinion might still be the same in certain parts of the country and among certain people in our country. And we have a leadership of both parties in our country that doesn't seem invested in the same sort of programs that we're talking about from that era. Why is that?
No, they don't. They do not have. We do not have a leadership today. This is why I call that group of baby boomers the gifted generation, because they receive these gifts from the government. As to why we don't have these this leadership today. It's very simple, Paul. The two major parties are out of touch with many Americans. The Democrats, they go after the professional classes, the financial interests, particularly the banking community, and the Republicans are very big in the extractive community as well. In many respects, the Democrats and Republicans seem to a similar audience. So we really don't have that much of a difference in terms of public policy.
Okay, so when did that start? When did the notion that the federal government must work for all Americans begin to erode?
It began to erode in the 1960s, especially as a result of the Vietnam War and the conflicts over the Vietnam War here. And it eroded because of the civil disturbances, the riots in the cities turned off many white voters. And finally, it eroded because of Watergate. So the reputation of the federal government really took a nosedive among literally millions of Americans. What we needed at that time, Paul, was a leader to step forward, and say, okay, we screwed up. Now we're going to get back on track, and we're going to resume our way to the future. And that didn't happen. Instead, we got Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter probably has the greatest post-presidency of any president, but as a president, he really didn't seize the moment and take the reins of leadership. And then we got Ronald Reagan, whose emphasis was on deregulating the government and in downsizing the government, but not dismissing the government, but rather using the government to promote a rather narrow constituency, particularly in Wall Street and in the extractive communities.
When we think about World War II, and you're talking about the era that started in the midst of World War II and then went on for several years after that, we talk about the veterans coming home from World War II who got an enormous boost from things like the GI Bill. Were they helped more by their government than our current veterans coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan or even going back to the first Gulf War have been?
Well, definitely, because government programs were much more pervasive in the years after World War II. I think the way we treat our veterans is shameful. I think all your listeners know about the scandals in the hospitals and the treatments for PTSD. So veterans coming home from World War II had it better in terms of support from the government. And one of the reasons is that now we have an all-volunteer army, so it's easy to shunt those people aside and forget about them because they're really only a small percentage of the population, whereas almost every able-bodied young man went to war in World War II. And so they were much more visible, and I think that's hurting us as well, in addition to a government that pays much less attention to the young men and women who preserve our freedoms.
What about college? You're a professor, as I mentioned, at UNC Charlotte. Is it harder for kids when it comes to college now than it was for what you call the gifted generation?
It's definitely harder. I've been teaching in Charlotte since 1982, and one of the changes I've noticed students coming to me and saying, well, I can only take two courses next term because I got to go out and work. We serve a primarily lower middle class, working class population. Many of our students, the majority of our students, are the first generation in their families to attend college. And as a result, it's really a financial burden for them. The Pell grants that supplied the scholarships for lower income students have been cut, and it's much more difficult. And you need a higher education in today's economy. So America used to be first to the future, and we're not that anymore.
And we particularly need that now that we're no longer a manufacturing economy. You know, we talked at the beginning about how these presidents came from blue-collar roots, and so they had blue-collar sensibilities. The concept of blue-collar workers and union members and manufacturing employees is so reduced now that has a direct impact on public policy, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and Europe has solved that. If you go to Germany, of course, Western European countries have been buffeted by the same globalization issues and technology that we have, and they're in a post-industrial economy as well, but they have used public policy and strong government programs to retrain their workers, to provide education. And also housing and other social safety net provisions that will make it easier for them. Very pro-family in terms of health care services and also family leave. So it can be done. It's not a question, we're just in a different time. That's not an excuse.
I was going to ask you if other countries in the world are still being led by activist governments in that way. And the answer, of course, is yes. I wonder if you believe that America can ever be good again. When, you know, your book is called The Gifted Generation, When Government Was Good. Can we ever get government back to being good in that way again in America?
Paul, I'm an inveterate optimist, and I do believe that we're beginning to see the start of a groundswell of opinion that will realize that the government, instead of being an obstacle, instead of being something to be afraid of, that the government can level the playing field, provided that it serves all of the people and not just a small segment of society. We've done it once, and we can do it again.
But that also means a massive change, as you mentioned, in both parties.
Yes, it does. And I think, again, I think that's possible. And I think particularly as the younger generation, the millennials in particular, they're looking for change. And I think it will come. It may not come in 2020, but it's certainly going to come sooner than we think.
Is it possible that one thing that makes it much more difficult for that to happen in an current day America than back in, say, Eisenhower's day, is that the notion of the progressive Republican no longer exists? That's that, you know, you can't even put those two words together anymore.
Probably not, but I wonder if you could say progressive Democrat either, because Theodore Lowy, a great political scientist, once said that Richard Nixon was our last Democratic president. Well, of course, he's a Republican, but what he meant by that in terms of the policies that Nixon promoted, particularly concerning the environment, his successors pared back government, and since then we've had two types of administrations. We've had Republican administrations and Republican light, which is, and they call themselves Democrats. So we really need a reorientation of our party system.
All right, the last thing I want to ask you about is the notion of universal health care. It, of course, has reared its head in the political candidacies of several people over the last couple of years. I didn't know until reading your book that this is not a new notion.
Oh, no. Harry Truman put it forward in 1946 because he believed that, particularly with the 8 million men returning from World War II, that we needed a universal health care system, and he believed that the insurance companies just could not do it by themselves, nor could the states. But that faltered because his plan was deemed socialist. The American Medical Association, in particular, opposed it. Eisenhower tried to revive a version of it. That didn't work as well. Lyndon B. Johnson also tried to revise it, and what they finally settled on was Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is better than nothing. It really protects seniors and their health, but it does not address the rest of the population. And so that's still a work in progress. It's amazing, Paul, how many ideas the Truman administration put forward we're still waiting on.
70 years later.
Exactly.
Wow. The book is called The Gifted Generation, When Government Was Good, written by history professor David Goldfield of the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.